Let us bow our heads together on this glorious day for a moment of gratitude and of prayer before the message. Gracious and loving God, you who are always bringing us to greater and clearer understandings of purpose and place, of love and of kindness, of mission, and of your work in the world, and our corresponding work in the world. Be with us here now, as you always are. Be with us here now, as we celebrate your presence, as we seek to do good and resist all evil, as we come to know your word in our hearts. Amen. So, Jesus begins with an assurance. And it's kind of the mother of all assurances. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. And Jesus has been saying this to us all summer. The whole of this book of Luke would seem to be variations on this theme, on bringing home to the listener by the Sea of Galilee, or to those listening today, do not fear. You will know to seek the kingdom because it has already been given to you. Do not fear. You will cultivate both patience and actions if you recognize this mother of all gifts. Your sights will be set not on accumulation of possessions, but on purses that do not wear out, goods that cannot be corrupted by the presence of moth or the lack of moral fiber. Figure out where your treasure lies, Jesus says, for there lies your attention and your time also. So Jesus begins with assurance, both here and now and there and then. There is a pull here between already and not yet. It is your Father's pleasure, Jesus says, to have already given you the kingdom. And when you get that, when you understand that, you will work to make it so for all. I used to play a game with my father called the citation game. Not so much a game as a competition. No reference books or internet searches allowed except for my anthology of poetry. And I would try to stump him. My father was a history professor and very well read. And he would identify every single line I gave him, citing chapter and verse. I had a very tough time getting the better of him. He would recognize things like thy cap, thy kirtle, and thy posies. He recognized as being Sir Walter Raleigh in the Nymph's Reply. The women come and go, speaking of Michelangelo, he recognized as T.S. Eliot's The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock. So long as men can breathe or eyes can see was a gift, Shakespeare, of course, but he could even name the number of the sonnet. He was even able to identify the line, today I am a swashbuckler. Would anyone like me to buckle any swashes? From a wonderful laugh-out-loud poem called No Doctors Today, Thank You, by Ogden Nash. But I was able to stump him with this one line, these two lines by W.H. Auden, and for that I have John Hoffman to thank, who was a former principal of Emmanuel College and one of my congregants at a previous congregation. I have him to thank. It's taken from his book, Faithful Stories, and it is this. Ruffle the perfect feathers, perfect manners, ruffle the perfect manners of the frozen heart and compel it once again to be awkward and alive. I had my dad. And I also had a subtitle for this sermon today on patience, assurance, awkward, and alive. Ruffle the perfect manners of the frozen heart and compel it once again to be awkward and alive. Now, I don't need to tell you, but we are sure seeing in our media feeds plenty of evidence these days of frozen hearts, often with far less than perfect manners. And it is hard not to let our own hearts succumb to the numbing and to the freezing, to let others set the agenda and retreat, to avoid the heartbreak and the challenge of choosing in each moment to be aware of both the promise and the possibility of the compulsion God gives us to remain, to become, to uncover again and again, being awkward and alive, being gifted. A number of years ago, I did the chaplaincy course at Sunnybrook Hospital. I learned much and questioned much and spent long hours in the company of those who were suffering. And I suffered myself from witnessing so much pain. The biggest and the most hard-won learning from that time was paradoxical in nature. In witnessing, in serving, and in accompanying others on their journey of dying, I recognize the infinite value of each life. And in that recognition was the gift of the kingdom. In a hospital, it matters not what you've got, title or property, influence or not, vast tracts of land or a small apartment. The reality of death is a great leveler. There is only your eyes meeting the eyes of the other. There is no dissembling or avoiding or hiding, no artifice or social niceties. It is life laid bare. It is awkward. There were times back then when I wished to flee, times when I wished I was anywhere else, but it is also those times when I was made aware, truly aware, and not just repeating by rote, but truly aware of the infinite value of each life and what it means to know we have been given the kingdom in life, in death, and in life beyond death. It came home with such a force that I was often in tears, overwhelmed by the truth of it and how we don't get it. It is through us, you and me, that God's Spirit is made manifest. We are acted upon by love so that it may be passed through us. It doesn't originate with us, passed through us to others. There is no one who can, by self-reliance or sheer act of will, produce love to order. Personal presence, each one of us, carries the weight of God. A child scared by a thunderstorm who, after being assured by his mother that God would take care of him, replied, "Well, you come up here and sleep with God. I'm going down with Dad." The immediate presence of someone who loves us and knows they are beloved moves us with a power that is past our understanding. I liken that awareness, especially on this morning of baptism, I liken that awareness of such love to a child laughing out loud in their sleep. Can you hear the echo of that joy? Do you remember ever laughing out loud for no reason at all, other than being full of laughter that needed to spill out? That is love. All our intelligence and all our effort cannot produce it. We can only bear witness, personal and communal. The other thing I learned in that time at Sunnybrook was again comforting and uncomfortable. It was uncomfortable to see the unbelievable banality of a dead body. At the moment of death, all life was gone. The intricacy of what that person, who that person was, the life that animated that body was gone, and I saw them go. And this is the comforting part. At the moment of death, there was an immediate absence. An absence that was a leave-taking. That which I feared most witnessing, death, was that which deepened my faith in everlasting life. That which was gone had gone the somewhere we all go. I do not delude myself or think I know more than anyone else, that I know where or how, but I know when. And I do know that in those moments of life and those moments of death, my own frozen heart was thawed forever. In those moments when I felt most awkward, I felt most alive. Ruffle the perfect manners of the frozen heart and compel it once again to be awkward and alive. The second part of this passage that we read in Luke is essentially a story of keeping watch, of servants being ready for their master so they may welcome him home when he knocks. My husband does that every day. I'm kidding. And not only welcome him, but be welcomed by him. Not only serve him, but be served by him. Not only feed him, but be fed by him. Now, some have seen this story as the need to always be on the ready, to be eternally alert, to never let one's guard down, to always be waiting and watching for the coming of the Master. Some have seen this Master as the second coming of Jesus, and certainly the early church did see that. As the years went by and he did not return, it became harder and harder to insist it be true. And some have seen this need to ever vigilance as being ready always for the moment of death, for the moment you meet your Maker. But I have another way of looking at this morning. To be constantly alert is exhausting. To be constantly on watch for what has not happened is paranoid-making and can lead one to miss the point of the passage and the thrust of the message. We have heard from this good book in other places, consider the lilies of the field. Who of you by worrying can add a single hour to your life? Do not be afraid, for I have given you the kingdom. The kingdom is not served by this unremitting alertness. We have seen this in moral rigidity and ethical poverty, always having an eye out to who is closer to the mark and who is further away, who is in and who is out of God's good graces. Jesus has spent the last 8 weeks of our sermons in this place, enjoining us to work for the kingdom we have already been given, to attend to the treasure we already have, if we would just see it. The creative process attested to by artists and scientists and mathematicians, by composers and writers, breakthroughs of awareness to you and I, only come when breaks are taken, when rest is allowed, when the Spirit is allowed the room to enter, when a piece, a fragment, a slice of the treasure is uncovered. Not as compensation or as achievement, but always recognized as gift. The whole of this remarkable creation and the life we live together is the treasure we are already given, and the treasure we do not yet embrace, and the treasure that prods us to the far-reaching gaze of life beyond death, gifting us with both the patience and the resolve to work toward and at the same time be aware of the kingdom in our midst. Ruffle the perfect manners of the frozen heart and compel it once again to be awkward and alive. And as it seems to be a morning for poetry, and as we have witnessed the baptism of Marley this morning, I offer a piece that came from looking into water on a summer morning, entitled Twice Blessing. I stopped there and looked into the water, seeing not only my reflected face, but the great sky that framed my lonely figure. And after a moment, I lifted my hands and then mine eyes, and I allowed myself to be astonished by the great everywhere calling to me, like an old, invisible, and unspoken invitation made new again in the sun and the summer and the cloud and the light, like something in one moment both calling to me and radiating from where I stood. As if I could understand everything I had been given and everything ever taken from me. As if I could be everything I have ever learned and everything I could ever know. As if I knew both the way I had come and secretly the way I was still promised to go. Brought together like this, with the yielding light and the symmetry of the moving sky, caught in still water. Someone I have been, and someone I am just about to become. Something I am and will be forever. The sheer generosity of being loved through loving. The miracle reflection of a twice blessed life. The awareness of the sheer generosity of being loved through loving. This awareness enlarges our understanding, welcomes our proper waiting, and invites our choices. This awareness ruffles the perfect manners of our frozen hearts and compels them once again to be awkward and alive. We see lots of the opposite of this awareness. Self-interest, self-reliance. What other selves can you think of? Self-indulgence. Now there is slow death to the finer feelings that give life its enduring satisfaction. Self-absorption. There is a major foe of good health. Self-consciousness spoils all effectiveness. Self-pity begets an inferiority complex and self-defeat. Living for self alone is self-torture because we discourage ourselves by comparisons that hurt and wear ourselves out by nursing needless grudges and protecting false pride. The tension of keeping up with this procession is more than our nervous systems can handle. So stop. You are loved. Where our attention is, there also will be our treasure. Amen.